The following program is being broadcast on the Amazing Women of Power, the world's leading positive programming network, powered by Raven International.
This show contains motivational language and may not be suitable for negative listeners.
My dreams. I've had enough of these annoying and distracting schemes. I'll choose my friends because apparently they're choosing me. The time is now to pay attention to my destiny.
From his humble studio in Orange County, California, comes a young songwriter with a dream, encouraging others to go after their dreams. Learning from the best in the business and passing it along to you, it's Strong Rider on the radio.
I had the blues, but I made it better, baby. And that's why I wrote this song. And now you can sing along.
My mind's made up to let you listen in on a conversation I just had on the phone with a very special guest. So I'm going to let the call speak for itself. We're going to go right into it. My name is Dean Olson, and you're listening to Strong Rider on the radio. Hello, is this Gary?
It is, Dean. How are you?
I'm doing just fine. Well, it's very nice to meet you, sir. I really appreciate you taking time to call.
Oh, that's okay. I appreciate your interest in Frank. I'm sure he does as well.
Yeah, Frank Shiner is who you're referring to, one of your up-and-coming artists.
I just barely met the guy, and I feel like I've known him for years. He's really a
wonderful guy.
He's a wonderful guy. He's very personable, and he's talented, too. I like the work that you did with him.
Thank you very much.
And he speaks highly of you.
Well, we got to be good friends, which is always a bonus in projects.
I imagine it is. Okay, Gary, let me give you a proper introduction here. How are we doing on time? Everything okay here?
No, I'm okay for a bit.
You're okay for a bit?
Yeah.
Okay. I have a very special treat in store for the next 20 minutes here. Special, at least for me. I have great admiration for this man's work. He is producer Gary Katz. And if you're not quite that familiar with the name, let me tell you, his handiwork is very evident in many albums that were produced in the 1970s and 80s, including the first seven original Steely Dan albums, of which all but one were nominated for a Grammy. He also produced Donald Fagen's solo effort in 1982 and other artists, Joe Cocker, Diana Ross, Laura Nero, 10cc, Eye to Eye, and Love and Money from Scotland. And as an A&R man at Warner Brothers Records, he is said to have been responsible for signing many artists, the likes of Prince, Dire Straits, Christopher Cross, and Ricky Lee Jones. And even earlier than that, Jimmy Buffett, Jim Croce, Rufus, and Chaka Khan. And now, recently, he has produced music and a debut album for friend of the show, Frank Shiner. I am very humbled to have this man call into the show, and you get to listen in on it. He holds kind of a selfish place in my heart because Steely Dan is one of my favorite groups. I loved all those albums, and he was the captain of the ship running things back then. So it is my sincere pleasure to have Gary Katz, producer, on the phone with me now. Gary, welcome to my program, sir. I really appreciate you coming on.
It's nice to meet you, Dean. It's my pleasure.
I'll admit, you're the first producer I've ever had on the show. I've talked to some in my personal life. I've always been fascinated as somebody who is a songwriter, working with a producer. But I want to know a little bit about you. How does somebody like you get started? You got the ball rolling with working with Bobby Darin. What was it? Was that a positive experience?
Well, I was a big fan, and it was a first job, so the combination was, exciting for me. I loved it because I found an entranceway into a business I wanted to be in. It's hard to get into the business. And
how did you come to actually work with the guy? Were you recording him, or did you work for him in some capacity?
I worked for him. Bobby owned a publishing company called TM Music, a pretty well-known company. And someone recommended me to the person who ran the company, which was Bobby's manager, a man named Ed Burton, a wonderful guy named Ed Burton. And a mutual friend recommended me, and he hired me.
Was it, I think I asked you this already, was it a pretty positive experience? Did you have stars in your eyes about Bobby Darin? Was this toward the end of his career, maybe?
No. Well, Bobby died very young, so he was in the middle of his career when he passed away. But, no, it wasn't a star in your eye kind of thing. I was a fan. I really enjoyed it. But I was more excited that I got a job in a business I wanted to be in.
Right. Personally, I probably would have been starstruck with Bobby Darin. I was a great fan of his, too. But yours seems to be the better view to take, so thank you.
When you were growing up and through high school, what were the dreams or indicators that led up to you getting in the music biz? In other words, was it destined, or was it kind of an unexpected turn that caused you to consider getting into music production and stuff?
Well, the two-inch, I listened to music all my life. I was a huge music fan. I grew up in that period where it went from "How much is that doggy in the window" to Chuck Berry. And I was about 13 or 14, and I, you know, heard rock and roll for the first time when it started. I went to all these Alan Freed shows in the Brooklyn Paramount.
Wow.
So it was a huge interest of mine, that and sports. I played a lot of ball, and, you know, as a kid, if you play ball a lot, you know, you always dream of playing and keep going and get to the highest level you can. But I didn't grow enough as my friends did, and so I had to think of another thing, and I wanted to be in the music business.
Did you ever consider being a musician, or were you a musician?
No, I played a little. I took lessons when I was younger. I wasn't as interested then as I should have been. And over the course of time, I can pick up a guitar and play just a little, but that, I would not call myself a musician.
Yeah, that kind of describes me too, so I relate a little bit, and especially about the love of music. I was always intrigued with the way records were produced, and I love to look at the credits, read the liner notes. I'm sure they didn't have liner notes back in your day. Those records had information on the back, but it really wasn't detailed, you know, in the 60s and 70s, right?
Right, they didn't give you a lot of information, and I was really, you know, I was 14, 15, and I wasn't as interested in those details as I was what I was listening to as a kid.
So you were more a fan of the music and just how it sounded and how it made you feel?
Yeah.
Okay, I got you. So Bobby Darin, he was with Avco Embassy, that label. Eventually you moved on to ABC Dunhill. I'm sure that working with Bobby Darin had to be a great stepping stone, huh?
Well, it gave me an introduction and insight into other aspects of the business that I wouldn't have known from the outside. So
okay.
In Bobby's case, or in my job there, I worked for the publishing company, and my job was to get artists, which at the time was a common thing, to have artists record songs that the publishing company I worked for owned, called, you know, basically it was a song plugger.
Oh, I see.
But it gave me entree into seeing other things that went on in and around the business. I wasn't very interested in being a song plugger or working for a publisher after a short time. I was more interested in creating music than pushing somebody else's song.
What is the job of a producer? It sounds so broad that it could mean all kinds of things. What do you think it is, at least from your experience?
My experience is, you know, putting the elements of a record, meaning the song, the musicians, the studio, putting all the elements that make up a record in the studio, from the beginning of finding the song to the end of delivering a finished record. So basically, a producer is like a movie director.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a movie producer, but more like a director. You put all the elements together, and at the end of the day, you deliver a finished record.
And you have your own production company now. When did you start that?
I was after Warner Brothers, where I was for a long time.
Yeah,
I just started to independently produce records for wherever the situation came up. So in that sense, you know, you're a one-person company.
And you worked for a few labels like Warner Brothers, MCA, and of course ABC. That's probably the most celebrated one that you have. Is there a difference between working with a major label? Did you have constraints that you, like the artist, might have?
Well, we had constraints, but producers, especially in the 70s, 80s, 90s, whatever, really had more run of the road than a lot of the other employees, because we created the music. And so I guess we took advantage of that, and it wasn't very constraining. I can't say it was. It was as good a time as you could want to be in the business of creating.
So as long as you're making money.
Yeah. But that's the case in any business.
Absolutely.
You're not creating and developing something for the company you're working with. You're not going to be there long.
Right. Makes perfect sense. It's a business. So, Gary, are you a married man?
Yes, I am.
I was just curious. I'm leading up to something here. Your first and only marriage?
Yes.
How supportive was your wife throughout all this time that you were building a career?
Well, I met her at ABC Dunhill, so this was not new territory for her.
Uh-huh.
Involved in the business herself.
Did she? So was she there from the beginning then?
I met her the first day I went to ABC Dunhill, yes.
Wow. Well, it's important to have somebody that can support you through that.
I'll say.
Since I have you on the phone, Gary, I had to ask you about a single and an album that I have here in my collection. It is a group that you produced in the 1980s, a male-female duo called Eye to Eye. Do you remember who I'm talking about?
I spoke to them an hour ago. Yes, I remember.
I guess you do remember. I thought I was going to have to jog your memory, so forgive me.
Yeah, really close friends of mine.
Oh, fantastic. You're talking about the Deborah
and Julian. Yeah,
those are... I was a big fan of it, but they didn't get a lot of... why didn't those albums seem to go anywhere? You seemed to produce something really great, and you had a lot of great musicians in there, and it just didn't run.
That one, that's a long story.
Is it?
There is a story to that, but at the end of the day, we did really... The record, we put out a single called Nice Girls.
Right, I love that one.
It went to number two in Atlanta. The record was really starting to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Fleetwood Mac, who were people I knew pretty well, were going on a tour called Tusk. It was 92 dates around the country. They offered the opening act to Julian and Deborah, Eye to Eye. The people at Warner's, who were my friends, decided that they didn't think it was worth putting up $100,000 to support that tour that would have put them in front of about 5 million people. And Julian said to me, you know, we have a record that's going top 20. If they're not going to support me now, they're never going to support me. I quit.
Oh, well, what a shame. I mean, this could have gone a different way, but at the end of the day, as you say, a decision was made, and that's...
Yep. With me to mind. It was a tough time right then.
Oh.
For all of us. We didn't.
Well... I do appreciate you sharing that with me. I would have never known that if I didn't ask. I loved Eye to Eye's music. They were really something special, and I'm sorry to hear what happened with the record company and the artist. That's a tough thing to go through. We were discussing Frank Shiner, one of your artists, a few minutes ago, and I always get a kick out of this quote that he gives in interviews. He says that Gary Katz, working with him, with all the people that he has worked with and all the admiration, the accolades that he gets, that he has every right to be a world-class jerk if he wants to, and he's not. I thought that was kind of, it's a backhanded compliment, but I thought it was really cool. It's very hard to find negative press on you, Gary. You must be a great guy.
Well, you don't do a lot of press. You're not going to get a lot of negative press. But
yeah, so you didn't do in the past?
Didn't. No, not a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, I did some, but not a lot. Not by standards that are, out there.
I gave you a heads up, Gary, about talking about Steely Dan. I wanted to make a confession. That is one of my favorite groups to listen to. I grew up with it. My friends and even I would love for you to go into great detail about how you created these legendary pieces of work for Steely Dan and Dinah Fagan and other artists. But based on... what we've just been talking about and the time constraints in this interview, it would go on so long, and I really want to respect your time. So I made the decision to keep it very brief.
You did the right thing.
I did. Oh, good. And I don't want to cheat the people. I mean, we are going to talk about them, but I do appreciate that. Based on what we've been talking about, it sounds like that, you know, you can pick up a Steely Dan album or a Donald Fagen album, and your work is pretty evident. So it's all there in the listening experience, I believe. And, well, let me get the compliments out of the way. So the last three albums you did for Steely Dan and Donald Fagen, they were Asia, Gaucho, and The Nightfly. Those three albums sounded so beautiful in their in the production, the instrumentation, how tight they sounded, and there was also a pristine quality to you know, the engineering with Roger Nichols. So even the comments I see on the internet, YouTube, and everything, they say it's a I see this. It says ultra clean production. You know.
Yeah, I don't go in to make clean productions. We go in just to make records we like. If they turn out as people call them clean.
Right.
Okay. I mean, I don't have an agenda to make clean records.
Yeah, that was kind of my, where I was going. I was wondering if that was intentional or, do you consider yourself a perfectionist in any way?
Yes.
How does, has that worked to your advantage, or do you see that, that's a double-edged sword? Because I am also.
That's a good question. It is a double-edged sword. I am a perfectionist. It's conscious. It's not like an unconscious thing. I don't go there to be a perfectionist, but I don't leave the studio till I think it's right.
Wow. You don't know how much I understand what you just said there.
So if that makes me a perfectionist, I guess so. And is it a double-edged sword? Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Not every artist you work with, one, either cares about it in the way I do, or sometimes thinks it's, as you would put it, too ultra clean.
Yes. No, not as I would put it. I did say that, but I agree that there was a lot of love in put into the engineering of it, and I know that, you know, you have to be perfectionist to make it sound that way.
So, yes, you have to balance that. You know, it depends on... I work for the artist.
Of course.
So I work with Frank. This is his record. His name is in big letters in the front. My name is in little letters on the back, which is something I always tell every artist when we go to work. It's their record. I am in the room, and I do, I guess you might say, influence some aspects of it. But it is their record, so I try and adapt to the situation depending on who I'm working with. But yes, I make clean records, as the world would put it.
Okay, I appreciate that. I appreciate your candor. I mean, it's a... I don't mean to build you up into this mythological character, like, you know, some people tend to.
No, I mean, I've read it, I've seen it, and I'm not proud of it, I'm not ashamed of it, it's what I do.
Yeah, I just thought I'd throw my two cents in. I was a big fan of all your, it turns out some of the stuff that I didn't even know that you had worked on, like Three Dog Night and
Steppenwolf. I never worked on Three Dog Night. Some of the information is not so. I worked. Three Dog Night was on ABC Dunhill.
Oops. Okay. Sorry.
I never worked with them.
That's the beauty of getting it straight from your mouth. But they just happened to be with the label. And you did you ever run into some of these people that were?
Oh, sure. ABC Dunhill was a small family. It was many less artists than Columbia or Warner Brothers at the time. It was a tight knit company. So we pretty much knew each other, even though we all went our own way.
Yeah. Well, Gary, your humility is really refreshing. I mean, it almost catches me off guard. I'm not so used to talking with people who have the view you have of your career. You just basically, hey, I went and did it, and there you go. The work speaks for itself.
It's what I do.
It's what you do. And there are only a handful of producers where you mention the name and you immediately know what artists they produce. George Martin, The Beatles, Phil Ramone, Billy Joel, Gary Katz, Steely Dan. And, you know, there are others, but you know, it's kind of nice that you're synonymous with that name.
Yeah, with those two guys is just fine with me.
Yeah. Okay, so when you were with the ABC Dunhill label, you met these two now famous songwriters, Donald Fagen and Walter Becker, Steely Dan. And is this where you met Roger Nichols also, who would start engineering the albums?
I met Roger. We all met Roger there. I brought Donald and Walter to California from New York. They were in New York working or trying to get ahead. And when I got a job at ABC Dunhill, I brought them along. So I didn't meet them at ABC Dunhill. I brought them.
I see. Okay. You know, sometimes when you're making albums and, you know, you're a perfectionist, as we were talking about, there can be things that will go wrong inevitably, and they're beyond your control. And I was just wondering if you're willing to talk about some of those horror stories. Gaucho, after having the success you did with Asia, I'm sure you wanted to follow it up with another great album, and it turned out to have some issues, budget, legal, and engineering issues. And when all was said and done, did you walk away from Gaucho with a good experience?
I love that record. So
yeah, I love it too. I just was curious.
We had an incident in the middle of the record where one of the tracks got erased accidentally by a second engineer.
Mm-hmm.
You're probably referring to that.
I am.
It definitely was a stressful couple of days.
I can relate to that. Not just from money, but it must have torn you up because you probably. You were all the way it was told to me is that it was that you were just getting it ready to listen to, and it got ruined because it got erased.
Well, it was going to be the single, and I was having dinner with my kids who were young at the time at the Stage Deli, and Roger walked in, who was the ultimate punster and kidder, and walked in without any sort of emotion and said, they just erased second arrangement, and he left, and I thought he was kidding, as he usually was. But when I finished eating and went around the corner to the studio, the second engineer who I was speaking of was sitting on the floor crying, and
couldn't
be a good sign. That's what happened.
Oh, that sounds so painful to go through, to lose all that work, because it's a labor of love, right? You go through all this this constant pressure, like a diamond being made, but in the end, you come up with something real nice, and then you can be proud of it, correct?
Absolutely. It's why I made the records the way I liked them, and if some people thought they were ultra clean, some will like it and some won't.
Understood. As a producer, did you have to get involved in any of the legal issues that they faced with Gaucho, for instance, being sued by Keith Jarrett? Over the rights to the, you know, one of the songs?
I wasn't involved in that. I knew about it, obviously, day to day, but I wasn't involved in it.
Okay. Just trying to learn a little bit, that's all.
That's okay.
I guess working in a studio can be stressful. It has its ups and downs, has its rewards.
You do a lot of hours in the studio, all sorts of things happen, so,
yeah,
you know, it's a world of its own. It has a life of its own, the studio.
Artists get sort of uncomfortable when there are strangers around in the studio. Do you discourage people from coming up and visiting when the session's going on to not break the mood?
It depends on the artist.
Oh, really? Okay, so it's all...
I never have a crowd there, if that's what you mean. But
right.
You know, yeah. But some artists are more sensitive to that than others.
When the recording's in session, do you use headphones to communicate, or do you like to be in the thick of, hear and see what's going on all around you?
Yeah, I don't use headphones. Use headphones for a few minutes when I'm mixing, but otherwise, no.
Yeah, just wondering. Different strokes for different producers, I guess. And you have a pretty good reputation in the business, so I was just wondering if a songwriter was looking for somebody to produce his album, what would he do? Would he have to roll the dice and hope that the guy that he gets is a good one? I mean, are there any warning signs about whether a guy's good or bad?
I'm not judgmental about that. One person's good producer is another person's hack.
Yeah, I guess that's an obvious answer. What do you do, look at their track record?
I listen.
You do?
It doesn't mean anything to me. Play me something and I'll tell you if I like it.
Yeah, sounds really straightforward. I appreciate that, Gary. Thank you.
Where are you located?
I'm in Orange County. I'm in the L.A. area.
Okay.
How many times did you, you're New York based, how many times did you have to travel out here?
I lived in L.A. for 10 years.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
I recently visited the Village Recorder, the studios. I guess you've been there. What did you think of that place?
Well, that was my home.
It was your home?
Yeah. That was my home in L.A.
What was a typical day like? You just get up, have a coffee or whatever, and then head on down to the studio?
No, I usually went to Warner Brothers in Burbank. There were the A&R department there were just producers. It was a bunch of guys who made records, and I would go in the morning, 10:30, 11, and do some things I needed to, and I'd go to the studio, 1, 2 o'clock we usually started, and it was always the Village. The Village was my home, as I said, and I would work there. That's where I'd be. Everyone knew where to reach me. Uh-huh. I was at the Village.
You were at the Village. That was your job. But now you're back in New York. Any differences notable from the L.A. life and the...
I don't think this is a part of the conversation you want. I don't like Los Angeles.
Oh. Oh, well, don't worry about that. You can't like everywhere.
I didn't like living there. I mean,
it wasn't your thing, huh?
No.
That's all right. I didn't build a place. I don't want to end the show on a note like that. How about we talk about Frank Shiner? Do you mind?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, Frank Shiner is this New York-based singer, fabulous voice. His press clippings are comparing him to Sinatra or Michael Bublé or... Bobby Darin, sort of coming full circle for you, Gary. But anyway, you produced his album, and my compliments to the chef. It sounds really, really good. And I was just curious about the process. Is it just like any of the other artists that you've done? It's a debut album, so did you have to hunt down just the right musicians and background singers, that sort of thing?
Yes, but I have a coterie of people I use.
Yeah.
Or call on, and depending on what the project is going to be. So I didn't have a difficult time. I have a group of musicians that I pull from. So that was good. And Frank liked it a lot. And the background singers, was a girl from Brooklyn and a girl from Bloomington, Indiana, who I work with. And these days, digital computers and all being what they are, you can do recording anywhere and have it shipped over, you know, in 1 minute.
Do you like that about the advancements in technology now? That
it doesn't matter whether I like it. It is what it is. It'll never go back, so I utilize it.
True. But now you're your own entity. You have evolved into having your own production company. Do you still deal with issues like, this album was full of cover tunes? And
no, it's not an issue at all. It's just licensing.
So you got to budget everything all by yourself and everything?
I make a budget before the project. I submit the budget to whoever is paying the bills, and I work from the budget.
Yeah, and what you came up with was very special. Frank has a debut album that he can be very proud of now, thanks to you. I know he brought the talent, but you made the thing sound very pleasing to the ear. And Gary Katz, I want to thank you so much for calling into the show. You've made this a very happy day for me.
Well, I appreciate the time. I'm sure Frank does as well. And
yeah.
It was nice meeting you.
It was really nice to meet you too, Gary. Thank you. And I know, forgive the questions if they were a little trite at times, but you were very gracious.
So it was fine. I enjoyed it. It was no problem at all.
Oh, I'm glad to hear that. Okay, thank you again, Gary, and have a great rest of the day.
And you too, Dean.
Okay, take care now.
Bye-bye. You too.
Well, there's my world. Welcome to it. Strong Rider on the radio. Oh, man. At times it was tough. I felt I was asking him really stupid questions, but I was never in the record biz. I really wanted to talk to a big-time producer, and he sure fits that bill. He's had 40-plus years experience in the business, and he's done top-notch work, and it was just an exciting experience to get to talk to him. And as far as my self-consciousness goes, he replied back with an email and told me how much he enjoyed being on the program, so that made me feel great. I really hope you enjoyed listening in, and we'll be back next week. My name is Dean Olson. You've been listening to Strong Rider on the radio, helping songwriters stay musically fit. Take care, everybody, and we'll see you next week. Have a great weekend. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Strong Rider on the radio with your host, Dean Olson, on the Amazing Women and Men of Power, the world's leading positive programming network powered by Raven International.